salt off her hand. For real, this is big and you deserve it. Shawnee pouted in gratitude. She went in for a hug and said, thank you, Amira. Amira never really understood hugging someone in the middle of a conversation, but this was Shawnee's night, so she squeezed her back hard. She smelled the creams in Shawnee's hair from products that had names like Beautifully Mixed and Half and Half. Shawnee stayed close after Amira backed away. And between you and me? Well, Shawnee looked toward Josepha's bedroom door. You know what? I'm sure she already knows, but I'm probably gonna start looking for a one bedroom or a studio. Oh, for real? Amira was shocked, and then she was jealous. And then she wondered, is that what we're supposed to be doing right now? 'Cause if it is, I ain't there. I've obviously loved living here. Shawnee kept her voice down despite the fact that Josepha could be heard speaking with her sister behind her closed bedroom door. But yeah, Shawnee said. I just think it's time. But more importantly, you should take my room. I want it to go to someone who I can come back and see, besides Josepha, obviously. Amira currently lived with a classmate from Temple, a graduate student who stayed at her boyfriend's apartment from Wednesdays to Sundays, in a tiny fifth-floor walk-up where the rent was $760 each, soon to be $850 in 2016. She had a twin bed, and only one of the stove burners worked, but it was just fine for now. Shawnee's apartment was better on all accounts. There was a coffee shop nearby, the bedroom windows opened up to sky and not concrete walls, and it wasn't in Kensington, it was in Old City. But there were all these parts of Shawnee's apartment that made it Shawnee's apartment regardless of location, and those would all leave with her. The HBO her father paid for, the framed prints on the wall that were painfully commercial, bridges, sunflowers, a New York skyline, a spice rack that was alphabetized, and a flowery oven mitt that hooked onto the fridge. Shawnee had a stereo system in her bedroom and a record player in the living room. When Amira's roommate wasn't at her boyfriend's, the two of them played music in the kitchen from a bowl they called the phone bowl. If they put it on top of the refrigerator, it seemed to echo best. That's a really amazing offer, Amira said. What's your rent again? Oh, it's not bad at all, Shawnee shook her head. Only $1,150 each, plus utilities. Total steal. Oh shit, Troy's calling me. Babe, hi. Zara emerged from Shawnee's room holding a slinky red dress against her shoulders. I'm trying this on. Shawnee waved a hand at her and said into her phone, boy, I'm not taking no for an answer. Shawnee started undoing the buttons on her blouse in the living room and held the phone between her ear and her shoulder. You know what? I'ma send you a picture, and then I want to hear you tell me no. Amira finished the rest of her wine. Zara, will you take a photo for me? Shawnee walked into her own bedroom. Girl, why you have to beg him like this? Zara said. She threw the red dress onto Shawnee's bed. Just let me change bras real quick. Hang on. Amira took a breath. She grabbed her phone from her purse, braced her hands against the wall, and crawled out the kitchen window. She hugged her elbows together on top of the fire escape and crossed her legs beneath her, careful not to kick the planted herbs. Kelly answered on the second ring. Hey, are you okay? Let me get somewhere quiet. Hang on. It was cold outside, but she wasn't about to climb back in for her jacket. In the receiver, Amira heard men's voices in the background above earth, wind, and fire. This was the first time she'd ever called Kelly. Hey, what's up? Hi, sorry, she said. Sorry, you sound busy over there. No, I'm just at the last event of this conference, he said. It's just a bunch of tech guys drinking Long Island iced teas. Oh, gross. Okay. What's wrong? No, nothing. Amira shifted so her socks covered as much of the grates below as they could. She leaned her back against the wall to Shawnee's apartment and looked down to the sidewalk, where a delivery man repeatedly buzzed an apartment door. Sorry, I don't really have anything interesting to say. I just had a really shitty day.
No way, Kelly said. I did too.
Really?
It was the worst. Tell me yours first, though.
Amira told him all about Mrs. Chamberlain, spoons, and how she began her afternoon by showing a teenage clerk a picture of a dead fish. When she told him that they missed the Halloween party, that her days taking Briar to ballet were over, Kelly said, "No, not the Halloween party at Lulu's." Amira laughed. "I brought my cat ears and everything. It just pissed me off that she didn't want to talk to her kid and made her miss a party because of it."
Well, any mom who misses the chance to dress her kid up like a hot dog sounds like a psychopath to me.
Exactly. Thank you. And now, Amira took her voice down. I'm at Shawnee's, and she just got this huge promotion. So now she's all hyped, and I know I should be happy for her. But I just want to punch her in the face and go to bed.
Easy, killer, he said. Just buy her a drink.
Amira held on to the railing. Now you tell me yours. That day, Kelly introduced himself to who he thought was a tech lead named Jesse. The real Jesse was a woman, but Kelly had introduced himself to her male assistant in front of her and her team. He'd also gotten salad dressing in his eye and thought he was blind for approximately 2 minutes. And he just hated Cleveland. I get back early tomorrow, though. Okay. Inside, Amira heard Shawnee and Zara call for Josepha. Josepha replied with an annoyed, "What?" Amira bent to glance inside the kitchen and saw that she was still alone. "I'll let you go. Sorry," she said. She sidestepped and winced. "Sorry, I know this was weird."
"Why would it be weird?"
"Wait, are you going out right now?" "Yeah, I think I have to."
"Well, hey, go sleep in my bed when you're done."
Amira laughed and said, "What?"
"I'll call my doorman and tell him you're coming. Sleep there and we'll do breakfast tomorrow."
This, Amira thought, was the most adult thing that had ever happened to her. "Wait, no," she said. "Kelly, I can't do that."
"There's absolutely no reason you can't do that," he said. "It's a perfect opportunity for you to steal whatever you want. I'll call the front desk right now. Does that sound good?"
It sounded so good that Amira said,
Kelly said, "What do you mean,
Inside the window, Zara yelled,
"Bish, you need to relax your shoulders."
Amira looked up into the dark clouds and said, "Let me think for a second." "Amira, come on," Kelly laughed. She heard him take a breath before he said, "Are you gonna be with me or what, miss?" She placed her hand to her forehead and grinned. By the time she crawled back into the kitchen, she had a new text from Kelly. "Frank knows you're coming. Bring your ID." Amira helped herself to another glass of wine as she heard Zara say,
"Sepha, you gotta get closer, sweetie."
Amira pushed Shawnee's bedroom door open. Inside, Shawnee was topless and kneeling on top of her bed, cupping her breasts with one arm and hanging the other at her side. Josepha was holding a desk lamp above her head and saying,
"I feel like you have to get even higher, Z."
Zara stood on a chair with Shawnee's iPhone held out in front of her.
"Wait, Amira's better at this."
Zara tossed Amira the phone.
"I get down and hold your tits up, though."
11. Alix didn't care that she was plateauing 8 pounds above her pre-baby weight. She didn't notice that she and Peter hadn't had sex in almost 3 weeks. To be fair, he didn't seem to notice either.
He was getting insane camera time while covering the current snowstorm. And she was also fine to ignore her editor's emails and calls, asking how the book was going, and if there were a few chapters she could read over the holiday. Everything could stop for just a second, because Rachel, Jody, and Tamara were coming to Philadelphia for Thanksgiving. Even better, Alix would go back with them to New York City for 5 whole days. The Clinton campaign had finally reached out and asked her to attend a women's event. It would be her first time back in 8 months, and Catherine's first visit to the city. And as Alix removed her gloves and hat in the front vestibule of her home, Amira's phone glowed with a text banner across the top. "We regret to inform you that flight WX1492 is no longer in service." Outside, snow raced so quickly that it seemed impossible that it would settle. But it did, burying cars and trees, slamming storefront doors shut, and then keeping them spread open like very used books. The top of the Chamberlain porch stairs had been the stomping ground for mud and ice for the past 3 days. Alix still made the trek to swim class in Ubers and cabs. She and the girls were often the only ones in the pool, because she was quickly running out of patience and indoor activities. Games like, let's look at pictures on Mama's phone. Let's play go underneath the blanket. Let's pull all the books down from the bookshelf and put them all back again. But tomorrow was Thanksgiving, and this Thanksgiving was going to be different. Alix and Amira hadn't been the same since Briar's fish died 3 weeks ago. On a Monday, Amira turned down the offer to take extra cookies home so that Alix wouldn't eat them. And on a Friday evening, when Alix offered her a glass of wine, Amira had said, "I'm actually okay, but thank you." This shift in their relationship haunted Alix in everyday places where she never would have imagined she'd ruminate about her sitter. In a bookstore, Alix found herself pondering what time Amira went to bed. While breastfeeding Catherine, she wondered if Amira had seen the movie Pretty Woman and if she found it contentious. On the escalator inside Anthropology, Alix imagined what Amira had said to Zara about her, and if Zara was the type to blindly agree or push back. Alix also found herself reorganizing her lifestyle around Amira, despite the fact that she didn't have an explicit reason to. If Alix went shopping, she took the tags off clothes and other items immediately so Amira couldn't see how much she'd spent, even though Amira wasn't the type to show interest or ask. Alix no longer felt comfortable leaving out certain books or magazines, because she feared Amira eyeing her Marie Kondo book and subsequently thinking, "Wow, how privileged are you that you need to buy a hardcover book that tells you how to get rid of all your other expensive shit?" Sometimes, Alix found herself pretending in front of Amira that she was about to eat leftovers for dinner. In reality, she'd be thinking to herself, "Just order the sushi. Just text Peter and ask him what he wants. What point are you trying to prove by eating leftovers?" But still, she'd wait till Amira closed the door behind her to go to her computer, ask Peter if he wanted the usual, and place her order via Seamless. In the beginning, Alix would search Amira's name on the internet and Instagram to see if she'd finally gotten an account. She'd convinced herself that this was a safety precaution concerning her children. But now, Alix had taken to looking at her own Instagram account while imagining she was Amira and viewing it with fresh eyes. She'd slowly scroll through her own feed and guess which pictures Amira would click on. Amira never hinted that she felt this way, because why would she? But Alix often felt that Amira saw her as a textbook rich white person, much in the same way that Alix saw many of the annoying Upper East Side moms that she and her girlfriends had always tried to avoid. But if Amira would only take a deeper look, if she gave Alix a chance, Alix knew that she would begin to think otherwise. Alix fantasized about Amira discovering things about her that shaped what Alix saw as the truest version of herself. Like the fact that one of Alix's closest friends was also black. That Alix's new and favorite shoes were from Payless and only cost $18. That Alix had read everything that Toni Morrison had ever written. And that out of her group of friends, Alix and Peter actually had the smallest salaries, and that Tamara was the one who always flew first class. Alix often and unsuccessfully tried to drop these bits of information, but tomorrow, if things went Alix's way, Emira could see all this in person. Rachel, Jody, and Tamara would be taking the train to Philadelphia on Thanksgiving morning. Rachel was thankful to not spend the holiday alone. Hudson would be with his father. Tamara would be coming with her daughters, Imani and Cleo. Her husband was traveling for work in Tokyo. And Jody's entire family would be present. Her husband, Walter, her 4.5-year-old daughter, Prudence, and her 1-year-old son, Payne. It was Thanksgiving that made Alix realize that her 3 best girlfriends hadn't yet met Catherine, who was almost 7 months old. Had it been that long? Catherine, who looked more like Alix every day and was so easily totable and darling and unconcerned with crawling that she made Briar seem borderline manic. Her girlfriends had joked about Alix showing them a traditional Murphy Thanksgiving, complete with very suburban decor, fluffy turtlenecks in warm fall colors, DIY Pinterest projects and table toppers, and the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on repeat. But this joke had turned into an ironic theme that Alix couldn't wait to execute. Alix hired 2 caterers to pour drinks, hang coats, serve food, and remove plates. She filled the first floor of her home with pumpkins, gourds, wheat stalks, and acorns. A turkey piñata was waiting to be hung above the massive rented dining table set up in the stretch of the tiled foyer. With red twine above a small table that held 4 different types of pies, Alix hung slips of brown craft paper where guests could write down what they were thankful for. She was delighted to consider the upcoming day, being around her 3 favorite women with a cheesy Thanksgiving scheme and tons of red wine, but just the idea of Emira being there too made her blush into her scarf. Holding her last grocery store lot, bread, pink salt, butter, cookie dough, club soda, Alix said, "Hey!" and set the reusable bags on top of the counter. Catherine was drooling on a blanket while sitting in a bumbo at the center of the room. Emira held Briar's hips as she stood at the window seat and pointed out onto the street. Briar said, "Mama, the window is biting my fingers." Emira turned and said, "I can't believe you went out in this mess." "Thank God for the weather," Alix thought. Most of her conversations with Emira in the last few days were fueled by weather management. If Briar should wear gloves, if an art class was snowed out, or if Emira needed to borrow an umbrella for her travels home. Alix rolled her eyes at her own actions. "It was insane and kind of apocalyptic. I shouldn't have made you come out today."
"Nah, it's cool. It's only 2 days," Emira said.
She turned back to Briar and said,
"I'm not going to see you for a little bit, B."
Briar's top teeth popped out in response.
"No," she disagreed. "No, you see me." "So I usually see you 3 times a week,"
Emira explained. She held up 3 fingers and Briar grabbed onto them.
"But this week is Thanksgiving, so I'll only see you 2.
When Emira put her ring finger down, Briar looked offended.
"Nuh-uh,"
Briar shook her head.
"No, you see me 3. But then I'm gonna see you every day next week. Isn't that cool?"
"You're really saving me next week," Alix said. She opened the refrigerator door and the quickness of it made a loud suck of air. "Emira, I hate to say it," she winced, "but you should really check on the status of your flight tonight."
"Really? Just to be safe."
Alix started moving containers and plates around in the refrigerator.
"You can use the computer there."
Was this cruel? Trying to win a Best Supporting Oscar as she waited for Emira to learn her flight was canceled? Who cared? She'd make up for it anyway. The realization that Emira could have a seat at their Thanksgiving table made Alix practically high. Suddenly, the 4th Thursday in November wasn't just a holiday. it was 4, or hopefully 5 or 6, hours to finally make Amira family. It was a night to say through Malbecs and yams and candlelight and pie that Alix hadn't forgotten about that night at Market Depot, that she thought about it every day, multiple times, that she'd never go to that grocery store again, even if it was an emergency, even if it was snowing the way it was now, even if Amira wasn't her sitter. Amira moved to the computer and clicked as Alix prayed that Zara didn't have family in Philadelphia. Amira put her elbows on top of the desk, touched the sides of her face, and said, "Well, shoot." "Oh, no," Alix said. She closed the refrigerator door. She couldn't overdo it, but she had to appear like this was in fact a tragedy. "Amira, my heart is breaking for you. I'm so sorry. I feel like I jinxed it." Amira kept staring at the screen. She bit her bottom lip and took a deep breath as Briar crawled into a nearby chair. "No, sorry. Is it okay if I call my mom real quick? They bought my ticket, so they might know about a later flight." "Absolutely. Briar, get down." Briar said, "Mama, you can't touch Mira's water." And as Alix set her on the ground, she said, "Okay, I won't. Thank you for telling me." By the time Amira came back upstairs, Alix had turned music on low. Paula Cole played softly as Briar explained that even a snowman needs a nap sometimes. Alix picked up Catherine, who snuggled tightly into her chest. Amira sat down at the windowsill. "Looks like I'm the last to know," she said. "The earliest flight I can get is tomorrow night, which would make the trip pointless." "I'm so sorry, Amira." Alix turned Catherine around, the back of her head leaning into Alix's chest. Briar walked to Amira and began tapping on her knees. "Maybe it's better to find out now than at the airport?" "Yeah, I went home last summer, so it's okay. And there's nothing I can do, I guess." "Amira." While she rocked her second daughter in front of her stomach, Alix walked over to her sitter at the windowsill. "I know it's not your first choice," she said, "but we would absolutely love if you spent Thanksgiving with us." "Oh, wow. No, no." Amira shook her head. "Okay, 'cause Mira," Briar interrupted. I'm your first choice." Alix thought, "Yes, Bri, good girl." Amira laughed. "Well, I can't really argue with that," she said. She reached forward to pick up Briar from underneath her armpits and turned her around to sit her on her thighs. "That's extremely nice, but I'll be okay." "Amira," Alix kept on bouncing, hoping it gave some coolness to her words, which she knew she had to deliver like a decent option rather than a desperate plea. "I'm telling you that the grocery stores are nuts, and I've been in my 20s, and I've done Chinese takeout for Thanksgiving before, and it never made me happy. It made me really depressed, and I swear it also made my face break out." It was still 1,000 times better than spending the day with her own parents in a smelly nursing home, but that wasn't the point. "My 3 best girlfriends from New York are coming in. We're going to have way too much food, and we'd love to have you." Briar reached up with 6 fingers and said, "How many is this?" Amira touched her hand and said, "That's 6. Mrs. Chamberlain, I really appreciate it, but it actually looks like my boyfriend will be stuck here with me." She glanced at her cell phone. "He was supposed to meet his family in Florida, but his flight got canceled too." This was even better. "We'd love to have him," Alix said. "Bring your boyfriend. 4 o'clock on Thursday, and you won't be here as a sitter. No diaper changing or anything. You guys will just be here as guests." Amira exhaled in thought.
"If you eat all your toes,"
Briar looked back at Amira and whispered,
Then guess what, Mira? No more toes."
Amira pressed the main button on her cell phone, smiled, and said, "Let me ask him." As Alix prayed for the second time that evening, Amira wrapped her other arm around Briar's waist. "B, should I eat turkey here with you? I don't really like eating toes." Amira wore earrings with square copper plates, and instead of answering, Briar reached up for them and said,
"I want to open this."
"It doesn't open, Mama," Amira told her as she texted. Hearing this pet name made Alix fidget and think, "Please, oh please, oh please, come tomorrow." Amira looked at Briar and asked, "Should I come eat pie with you this week?"
"Yes," Briar decided, "but you can only have 10 pieces.
"Only 10? That seems fair, I guess." Amira looked at her phone. She looked back up at Alix. "He said he'd love to come." It took everything in Alix not to drop her daughter and hold her chilled cheekbones in her hands.
"Did you hear that?" Alix said into Catherine's ear. "Mira's gonna come eat turkey too. Is that okay?"
Amira reached over and squeezed Catherine's foot.
"Can I come hang out with you on Thanksgiving?"
And then, Catherine May Chamberlain looked at Amira and said,
"Hi."
Amira and Alix gasped. Alix felt her face flush and tears run to the corners of her eyes. She turned her daughter around and brought her face up high.
"Did you just say hi?" she asked. "Did you say hi to Amira? Briar, did you hear your sister?"
"Mama," Briar called. "Can you take a picture of Amira's earring? Let's take a picture."
Amira bounced her.
"Your sister just said hi, big girl."
"Can you say hi again?"
"No,"
Alix swallowed. Catherine smiled sweetly, and Alix held her little body close. She shook her head happily and said,
"Amira, go home."
Amira laughed and said,
"What?
It's insane out there. Go home and we'll see you on Thanksgiving."
"Oh, I can give Briar a bath real quick."
No, Mira, go." The warmth Alix felt for her daughter's first word and for the day she was about to have, it was almost too much to keep in one room. If Amira stayed much longer, Alix would risk accidentally saying, "I love you," or ask if Amira liked babysitting for them, or how old Amira thought she was.
"Actually," she said,
"wait one second." Alix set Catherine back down in the bumbo, retrieved a Whole Foods bag from a bottom drawer, and opened up her refrigerator. She filled the grocery bag with 2 bottles of water, a frozen tortellini dinner, a can of soup, a can of chili, a pack of Briar's animal cookies, and a bottle of red wine. Amira came into the kitchen.
"Wait, Mrs. Chamberlain, what is this?"
"This is yours." Alix pushed it into her arms. "I'm sure you have food at home, but this is better than anything you'll find at a grocery store right now."
"Whoa."
Amira adjusted the bag in her arms.
"This is really, really nice."
"Just do me a favor," Alix beamed, "and come very hungry on Thursday. And Amira, I mean it. You're not coming to babysit. You'll be here as family, okay?"
Amira pouted a little in a way that made her look quite young. She pulled up the back of her leggings and said,
"Okay."
12. On Thanksgiving Day at 4:06 p.m., Amira stepped out of a yellow cab in beige faux suede boots. Kelly held the back of her arm as she spotted previously made footprints in the snow on the way up to the Chamberlain front gate. It was the first time all day the snow had stopped falling, and above their heads, it balanced an inch high on naked trees, wires, and window ledges. Amira stopped with one hand on the gate latch and the other around a bouquet of purple and yellow daisies. Through the cold, she could see her own breath.
"Hey, do we need a code word or something?" she said.
Kelly stuck his hands into his pockets and matched her low tone.
A code word for what?
If you're like, Amira blushed. If you're not having a good time and you want to leave.
Oh, okay. How about, I don't want to be here anymore.
Amira shoved his chest and opened the gate.
Boy, stop.
We'll be fine. I'm happy to be here, he said. I am expecting excellent wine, though.
I'm sure you won't be disappointed.
At the top of the landing, Amira went to take out her key, but today was different. She could already hear women's voices inside, along with multiple children who could speak in full sentences. Kelly stood next to her, so holiday handsome, in dark jeans, a red sweater, and a black coat that went down to his knees. They'd spent the last 24 hours together at his apartment having lots of sex, watching bad movies, and ordering in, and Amira felt more like an adult than she could have ever imagined. She looked up at him and whispered,
I feel weird using my key.
Okay. He placed his finger on the doorbell. Want to use this?
Amira said, yes. And Kelly pressed the button. Together, they waited. And Amira held her breath.
Hey. Kelly touched her waist as the doorbell chime sang. What's your boss's name again?
Mrs. Chamberlain.
Do I have to call her that? What's her first name, just in case?
It's like...
Amira adjusted her thick black braid on her shoulder.
Alex?
Ellen?
No.
Amira put her head to his shoulder.
It's Alex, but it's weird. It's like, Alix?
Amira, he grinned. How do you not know this?
I do, it's just not what I call her. Just call her Mrs. Chamberlain, shh.
They readjusted and waited in silence. In the painful pause, Kelly once again leaned toward Amira.
Is she European or something?
I don't know, maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
Jesus, Kelly, I don't know. She's white.
Kelly laughed into the top of his coat.
Okay, miss. Let me kiss you before they come.
Amira leaned into him, and she felt his lashes close on her face. They backed away as Mrs. Chamberlain opened the door.
Amira, you made it!
Mrs. Chamberlain's blonde hair was curled at the ends, and it flew with the gust of the door. Fumes of candlelight, pumpkin pie, and brandy came with her. Amira said,
Hi, Mrs. Chamberlain. Thanks so much for...
But then Mrs. Chamberlain said, Oh my God. With both panic and recognition, as if she'd almost walked into a very clean glass door. Amira watched Mrs. Chamberlain's face go into the same warfare that her daughters did when schedule did not go according to plan, or when Amira tried to read to her at night. With her hand on the door, Mrs. Chamberlain seemed to brace herself as if she were preparing to be hit, or as if she already had been and barely made it out alive. Kelly seemingly woke up, blinked twice, and said, Alex? Part 3. 13. Alix checked herself in the mirror. She wore a deliciously chunky oatmeal-colored sweater over tight jeans and brown boots. She walked downstairs with Catherine in her carrier. She whispered to Tamara, I think she's here. And then, as she swung the door open, she stepped back and tapped herself 15 years into the past. In front of her, stood both a grown man and a high school junior, and this person that embodied them both was saying, Alex? As if he knew her. There, next to her babysitter, stood Kelly Copeland, William Massey High School class of 2001. Alex Murphy's first everythings, blowjobs, sex, I love you, heartbreak, and a million insecurities in between. On top of his unbelievable presence on Alix's front stoop, the way he'd said her name had momentarily paralyzed her. Alex.
It sounded whiny and pedestrian, and it felt like she'd discovered a vegetable deep in a refrigerator drawer, forgotten so long that the mold it gained had also started to gain mold. Her heart buzzed as she thought, no, it's not possible. But the more they stood before her, she thought, fuck, 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 fuck. Amira laughed once and said, wait, what? As she looked from Alix to Kelly. Catherine started to squirm in the cold, and Alix said, come in, come in. It's freezing. Amira and Kelly stepped into the vestibule, and Alix closed the door behind them, thinking, Kelly Copeland is in my house. Past the vestibule door, Alix saw all the people she loved most surrounded by the campy Thanksgiving decorations she'd piled high in her trunk just days before, all glittering beneath a dumb fucking turkey piñata. It was all much akin to the over-the-top decor her parents would have paid for someone to assemble on 100 Bordeaux Lane, and for a moment, Alix actually thought, how fast can I throw all this garbage away? It wasn't supposed to look like this. It was supposed to be a joke.
Is this the wonderful Amira?
Jody's beige poncho flowed past her elbows as she came forward.
We're so happy to meet you. I'm Jody.
Don't be scared. Rachel hugged Amira next.
We just feel like we know you already. Hi, boyfriend. I'm Rachel.
Kelly. Nice to meet you. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Tamara came down the stairs appearing, as she typically did, presidential and important. She opened both of her arms to Amira as if she were a ringmaster at the top of the show and said, Amira? Bring it in, sister. She embraced Amira as Alix tried unsuccessfully to lock eyes with Jody.
Happy Thanksgiving, girlfriend. Let's get you a drink.
The three women seized Amira and took her to the bar, where the bartender asked if she'd like red or white. Just outside the front vestibule, where she'd read so many of his text messages, Alix stood with Catherine and Kelly. Catherine kicked her legs and chewed a sock she'd pulled off her foot. For the first time ever, Alix wished she hadn't strapped her daughter to her chest.
You look...
Alix had no idea what to say or where to put her hands.
Very much the same.
Because he so heartbreakingly did. His tallness was still shocking, and his hands seemed almost freakishly huge. This was Amira's boyfriend. This was Keenan and Kel. This was the guy Amira met on the train who told her that he was excited to see her tonight.
Thank you.
Kelly looked up at the chandelier above the table that stretched 12 places long, and the red and brown turkey piñata that swiveled slightly in the blasts of heat that came up from the floors. He was seemingly assessing the rest of his evening when he said, I see nothing has changed for you either.
Excuse me?
But before he could answer, Peter was walking over and sticking his hand out to Kelly like it was a football on the first day of the season. He smiled and said, Peter Chamberlain. The way he did on TV. Walter joined Peter to alight on the only other male presence in the house aside from Baby Payne, who was fast asleep. Rachel, Jody, and Tamara were interrogating Amira with drinks in their hands and nodding furiously at all of her answers. Alix removed Catherine from her chest and placed her in a playpen beneath a soft arch of hanging moons and stars. She paced halfway up the stairs, locked eyes with Jody, and mouthed over the banister. Come here. Upstairs, the kitchen was still. The counters were stocked with yams, mashed potatoes, bread rolls, and asparagus, waiting on top of burners and under sweating foil lids. Next to the girls' bedroom, Alix stepped over a case of red wine on the floor and opened the door to the tiny laundry room, which was more of a substantial closet by New York standards. When she heard Jody's footprints change from carpet to wood, she reached for her friend and pulled her inside.
Jesus, honey, what are you doing?
Alix said, shh, and pulled the string above their heads. A single light bulb clicked on in the small square space. Alix realized she was about to say Kelly's name out loud, and her heartbeat double-timed. "Listen to me," she said. "Downstairs?" Alix put her hands on Jody's shoulders. "That's Kelly Copeland."
"Okay,"
Jody smiled.
"I don't know who that is."
"Amira's boyfriend?"
"That's the guy from high school who took my virginity and broke up with me and told everyone where I lived and ruined my fucking life."
Beneath the shelves of guest towels, diapers, laundry detergent, and emergency batteries, Jody's green eyes went big.
"You're joking."
"Jody, I don't even..."
Alix backed up against the washer and dryer, which were stacked on top of each other.
"I don't know what to do."
"You just found out?"
"Just now."
"How long have they been dating?"
"I don't know, a couple months."
"Months?"
Alix said, "Shh," and heard Rachel's voice say, "Hello?" Alix opened the door and pulled Rachel inside.
"Are you two being bad?"
Rachel held a glass of wine that Alix thought might be her second of the evening that hadn't yet begun. Jody grabbed Rachel's arm.
"Alix knows Amira's boyfriend."
"From where? I thought you just met him. He's cute."
Alix fanned herself after Jody went on and explained. When Rachel fully understood, she said,
"Your ex-boyfriend is dating your sitter?"
Jody palmed Rachel's mouth with her hand, and Alix said,
"Shh. Okay, but wait."
Rachel removed Jody's hand.
"That's the fucktard you told us about?"
Alix nodded and placed her hand on her stomach.
"I feel like I can't breathe," she said. "Oh my God, he's here and I'm still so fat."
Both women hissed.
"No, you're not."
Jody tapped Rachel's elbow and said,
"Go get Tamara."
To Alix, Jody said,
"Okay, put your head between your knees."
Alix wanted to pace around, but she'd quarantined herself and her friend in this closet, and everywhere she looked were light bulbs and Swiffer refills and canvas bins overflowing with tangled extension cords. The reality of how completely different this run-in was from the last 15 years of Kelly Copeland fantasies came down on Alix and crushed her lungs. She was still 8 pounds heavier than she'd been before Catherine. The current state of her home wasn't the modern, minimalist environment she'd worked so hard to achieve. And there were babies everywhere. Not just the sleeping, cute kind, but Briar with her questions, and Prudence with her naughtiness, and Tamara's kids with their obedience that was somehow very pretentious. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. Throughout marriage, motherhood, and monumental career changes, Alix had always found herself forming ideal scenarios of how she would see a grown-up Kelly Copeland, or rather, how he'd see her. There were the cliché pipe dreams, seeing him after a particularly good blowout, running into him while wearing heels at the airport. But there were elaborate premises that took Alix entire showers and subway rides to fully flesh out the logistics of. In one of these more elaborate illusions, Kelly was on vacation in New York with a short, brunette, picture-taking, longchamp-toting girlfriend. After a frustrating morning of getting turned around on the train, they'd end up at the farmer's market in Union Square, and enter Alix, tiny Briar strapped to her front, both with messy and darling hair. She'd see them before they saw her, and she'd lift her sunglasses up onto her head. "Kelly? Oh my gosh, hi!" And then Kelly's girlfriend would promptly fall in love with Alix as she gave them excellent directions and recommendations for cheap cocktails on rooftops in the city. Alix would wave, "Good luck, have a great trip." And she'd be the one to walk away first. She'd be wearing something classic, like a white tee and red lips. Alix had even dreamed Kelly into her future. She hadn't exactly finished her first book, but maybe she'd write another. And this time, it'd be a book for young girls.
A 46-year-old, hopefully pudgy or balding, Kelly would stand behind his daughter in line at the Barnes & Noble on 86th Street. They'd drive all the way from Allentown and stay in a hotel by the train in Astoria. Alix would open her book and sign the title page for the inspired tween. She'd look up at Kelly, smile, and say, "Did you know that I knew your dad?" But here he was, nowhere near chunky or bald, explicitly reminding her of the night that ruined her high school career. And not only was he here, Kelly Copeland was dating Amira? Her Amira? The fact that he knew Amira at all seemed unbelievable. Could he tell when she was mad? Was he allowed to touch her hair? What did Zara think of all of this? Did she approve? And then Alix touched her forehead, coming to what she knew was an adolescent realization, but nevertheless, she thought, oh my God, Kelly and Amira have sex, simultaneously, with each other. With 2.5-year-old Cleo in her arms, Tamara opened the laundry room door. Rachel came in behind her, and the room seemed to meet its capacity. Tamara whispered, "What the?" as Cleo pointed upward and said,
"Light, mommy. Hot, hot."
Tamara said,
"That's right, don't touch."
Jody rubbed Alix's back in slow, circular clips.
"Okay, Tam, here's the situation."
When Tamara was caught up, she nodded and said,
"Okay, Alix? Hey."
Alix stood up, her face flushed and her head throbbing. It was high school a very long time ago. This is going to be okay.
I know it was a long time ago.
Alix wasn't anywhere near ready to be okay about Kelly Copeland. She placed her hands over Cleo's ears and said,
"Would you be calm if your ex was currently fucking Shelby?"
Tamara reflected on this and said, "Okay, I get it." Cleo covered both of her eyes and asked the room,
"Where's Cleo?"
"How did this happen?" Alix said to no one.
"Babe, you are so red right now," Rachel said. "You gotta cool it."
Jody's maternal instincts couldn't ignore Cleo. She tickled her side and said,
"We see you, lovey."
A child started crying downstairs and Jody looked to Tamara. "Is that my kid or yours? I feel like it's mine."
"Okay, this looks bad. We gotta get out of here," Tamara said.
"Listen, just be cool. Pretend that you went to high school with him and that is it." Tamara would have kept going, but her face turned. She looked at Cleo and said,
"Did you just poop?"
She lifted the child to smell her behind and then reported back, "Nope, we're good." This gesture devastated Alix, and she couldn't help but think, oh my God, my friends are such moms. Alix found it remarkable how she could be both in love and embarrassed at so many things at once. There was the age and status of her friends, Rachel, divorced twice at 35, Jody, the mommiest mom ever, also 35, and Tamara, though impressive in every other way, was quickly pushing 40. And then there were other numbers that suddenly seemed mortifying. The height of Alix's husband, the same as her, 5'10". Her own post-baby body, 141 pounds. And most of all, the fact she'd lain in bed the night before and been so pleased as she counted in her head how many African-American guests would be present at her Thanksgiving table. This number had totaled to 5. Rachel shook her head.
"I want to kill him," Jody said. "I think there was a This American Life where this happened."
Tamara nodded. "I know which one you're talking about." Jody asked, "Are you going to tell Peter?" Peter wouldn't know what to do with this information in the context of the evening. Alix needed him to be his charming self and keep Kelly occupied with gracious hospitality. She said, "Not tonight." Rachel waited a second before asking, Are you going to tell Amira?
This sent Alix back inside herself. She looked to Tamra and said, Tam, what do you think?
You're not telling anyone anything tonight, okay?
Tamra decided this for Alix and for the rest of the group. She and Kelly are probably having the same conversation we're having right now anyway. But listen, I'll take care of Amira. Peter and Walter are already taking care of Kelly. You went to high school with him, and that's it. What a coincidence. How funny. That's all.
Okay. Just a coincidence.
Alix reached her hand into the neck of her sweater and tried to create space between her sweating armpits and her top.
What a shame, though, right?
Rachel took another sip of wine. Their kids would be gorgeous. 14. When Mrs. Chamberlain had opened the front door, Amira had to stifle her laughter. Mrs. Chamberlain's face had landed at a similar bewilderment as it had the first time they met. 5 months ago, Amira watched Mrs. Chamberlain swing her door open to reveal a person she'd created in her head. And surprise, it was someone much darker. Mrs. Chamberlain was so graciously confused at the sight of Amira that she even apologized for herself.
Sorry, hi, you're so pretty. Come on in.
And her reaction to Kelly on Thanksgiving was much akin to this. But as Amira waited for her to apologize for herself, Kelly called her Alex. Amira's knowing giggles turned into nervous laughter, and Mrs. Chamberlain's face curved down. Before she could get an answer, Amira was pulled into a thankful wonderland and ambushed by three other moms. The women shoved a glass of red wine into her hands as they asked her where she was from and where she went to school and if she was caught up on a sitcom called Blackish. When Amira said she hadn't seen it, Tamra touched her arm with a solid hold and said, Oh, Amira, you have to see it. It's a very important show. After the three women all headed upstairs, Amira spotted Briar in the living room in a plaid and uncomfortable-looking dress, sitting next to two other little girls, one with bright red hair and the other with a tiny afro held back by a flowered headband. Amira tapped Briar on the shoulder. Hey, Pickle. Briar stood. She solemnly wrapped her arms around Amira's neck.
I don't like fancy shoes in the house.
You want to come meet my friend?
Briar didn't say yes, but Amira picked the little girl up and walked back toward the front hall, where Peter, Kelly, and another man were talking.
This is mine, Briar said to the man Amira didn't know. This is my friend.
That's terrific, he said.
He had huge cheeks, big shoulders, and looked like a young Santa Claus in a white sweater with knit swirls.
We haven't met yet. Walter, I think you already met my wife, Jody. All the redheads you see are mine.
Amira, nice to meet you, she smiled. Hey, Bee, this is my friend Kelly. Can you say hi?
Briar tucked her head into Amira's neck at what looked like a painful angle. She could still inspect Kelly even though her face was almost upside down. She stuck out two fingers and said,
I'm three.
Kelly turned toward the little girl and said,
No way! I'm three too!
Briar eyed him and grinned.
No.
I'm just big for my age, he said.
Well, I'm actually 3 1/2. Amira's lips mushed against each other and she felt so pleased. Of course, he was completely wonderful and easy with children. Of course, he had a scripted show of how to entertain new ones before they became familiar. But as Tamra came down the stairs, Jody, Rachel, and Mrs. Chamberlain in tow, Kelly ended his routine early. He placed his hand to Amira's back and said, Can we talk for a second? Amira said, but Tamra interrupted their gaze.
Briar, I know you're so glad your buddy is here today.
Amira, can you lend me a hand in the kitchen?
She passed Cleo to Jody and headed back upstairs. The woman's question sounded more like a command, and from the way she threw back her shoulders as she walked, it seemed like she very much expected Amira to be coming right behind her. Amira set Briar on the ground.
I guess I'll be right back.
On top of the upstairs table was fancy silverware Amira had never seen before, and a pile of cloth napkins next to it.
I just need a hand folding this silverware real quick, Tamra said. I'm sure you know how.
Amira said, sure. But this all felt very strange. Not only did she not know how to fold silverware into napkins, but the pile of hand towels seemed careless in a way that didn't match Mrs. Chamberlain. Mrs. Chamberlain definitely would have completed this task before guests arrived. Had Tamra unassembled them just so she and Amira could have this moment? Weren't they all about to have dinner together anyway? Amira looked down and she was almost startled to find her own olive green dress instead of the oversized white polo she wore every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Tamra laid the knife down first, and Amira copied her steps. After completing the first roll of silverware and tossing it into a wicker basket, Tamra reached over and gently tugged the bottom of Amira's braid.
So what's up underneath here, huh?
I'm guessing you're afraid to go natural?
Oh. Amira laughed more out of discomfort than indifference. She'd been to several events where another black party guest was foisted on her by a well-meaning but ignorant host, but Tamra appeared to be conducting this interaction on her own. It reminded Amira of the one time she'd watched an episode of The Bachelorette at Shawnee's apartment. Four times she had to witness hometown dates, in which the father of a white woman stood up at a stage dinner table and asked the bachelor if they could have a man-to-man chat. Each time, Amira cringed more than the last.
I don't know, Amira said. I like it long, I guess.
Want to know what I use on my girl's hair?
Tamra stood up straight and counted the ingredients on her fingers.
I put coconut oil, water, and grapeseed oil in a spray jar, comb it out once a week, and honestly, that's all you need. How long is your real hair, honey?
Amira almost flinched. She was suddenly so grateful to need both of her hands as she tucked a corner of a napkin into a crooked fold. She could already hear Zara's response to this question, which would be a wide-eyed,
"She asked you what?"
Amira kept her brown eyes low.
Like, chin length, maybe? Okay, that's something,
Tamra congratulated her.
I can definitely see you with some curls, girl.
Mimi?
Imani appeared at the top of the stairs, and Amira felt her breath come back into her shoulders. She turned to the little girl and said,
Hey there, I haven't met you yet.
Amira continued to question Imani about being a big sister until all the silverware was wrapped. When Amira came back downstairs, she set the basket of silverware on the table and found Kelly on his way to the bathroom.
Sorry, that was weird, she whispered. Are you okay?
Kelly said, mm-hmm. And then,
I need you to check your phone.
Before he slid into the bathroom and closed the door behind him. Briar intercepted Amira in the foyer, and Amira swung her up onto her hip. She kept her there as she snuck away to the front vestibule, moving coats and scarves aside to dig into her purse.
Prudence has a big cat, Briar said.
Yeah?
Amira clicked into her messages.
What's his name?
There were three texts from Kelly on her phone, and she read them as Briar explained that cats don't pick their own names, and that the mama gets to pick. The first message from Kelly said, Your boss was my high school girlfriend. The second said, The one who only flew first class. The third said, I don't want to be here anymore.
15. Jody was meant to sit next to her daughter, Prudence, but Prudence had quickly remembered her obsession with a now very tipsy Rachel and begged her mother to switch. Peter and Catherine settled in at the head of the table next to Walter and Payne. Next to Alix, Briar fiddled with the strap that buckled her into her booster seat. Across from Alix, Amira reached forward and touched a hideously sparkled pumpkin that read, "Give thanks," in gold around its plastic body.
"This is all so nice," she said.
"Oh, it's not."
Alix threw her hair behind her shoulders as she sat down. She tried to explain, but like everything else she'd said in the last hour, it was more for Kelly than anyone else, which meant she couldn't find her words. Kelly took his seat next to Amira and winked at Briar in front of him.
"Well, it was kind of a joke," Alix said. "But it's silly, though."
"She's right, eh?"
Jody stepped in and saved her.
"This is absolutely lovely. Prue?"
Jody looked to her left and squared her daughter's face.
"This is a very special treat that you are sitting next to Miss Rachel. So, you need to behave, okay?"
Prudence did the same sneaky face she always did when Jody alluded to such a thing as consequences. Rachel high-fived Prudence and said,
"Us single ladies will be fine over here, right, Cleo?"
2-year-old Cleo shook her head.
"No, thank you."
Peter looked over at Alix, but said to the entire group,
"Should we say grace of some kind?"
Walter raised his chin at his daughter from the other side of the table.
"Prue knows a prayer, don't you, Prue?"
Jody mumbled,
"Oh, God."
"That's perfect," Alix said.
"Do you want to help us out?"
Prudence looked around the table as if she were about to execute a very rude and smelly prank. She folded her hands on the table and giggled to herself.
"For food and health and happy days, receive our gratitude and praise. And when we serve others, may we repay our debt of love to thee. Amen."
The adults at the table said, "Amen," and Walter echoed, "That's fantastic, kiddo." Tamara leaned forward.
"They taught her that at preschool?"
Jody reached for a pot of sweet potatoes.
"Don't even get me started."
Alix encouraged everyone to dig in, and those wonderful jingles of dinnerware hitting plates and porcelain started to drift up toward the ceiling. Everything sounded like the Thanksgiving she wanted, which made the evening even more eerie. The guests looked festive and warm under the glow of the chandelier. The snow swirled effortlessly behind the front window panes, and the front hall of her home had switched to a dining room quite easily. It smelled like a mix of berries, brown sugar, baked crusts, and burning flames. Briar pointed to every item of food that Alix put on her plate and asked,
"Mama, Mama, is this hot?"
Payne stood on Walter's knee and bounced adorably with a binky in his hand. Rachel applied strawberry chapstick to Prudence's little lips, to which Jody prompted,
"What do you say, Prue?"
Tamara replied to Imani's interest in this activity by raising her eyebrows and saying,
"Don't even think about it."
Everything sounded so homey and sweet and domestic, but across from Alix was her beloved babysitter, Amira, with what seemed from above the table like Kelly Copeland's hand on her left knee. As Alix spooned asparagus for Briar, she tried not to look at Amira while wondering, "How much do you know?" In a lull, Peter looked over to Amira and Kelly and asked,
"So, how did you two meet?"
Alix watched Kelly and Amira wait for the other one to answer, and this private language between them made her writhe in her seat.
"They met on the train, honey," she said this as she cut Briar's turkey. "Isn't that right?"
Kelly reached for his glass of wine and then, at the last second, grabbed his water.
"That is,"
Incorrect.
Well, Amira looked at him. Not entirely, though.
Uh-oh, Walter boomed. What's the real story then, Kelly? Come on now, let's have it.
At the other end of the table, Prudence blew bubbles into a plastic cup of milk. Jody eyed her and whispered, Prudence? That's one.
I don't,
Kelly looked unbearably cute as he struggled, and Alix had to look into her lap.
I don't know if it's appropriate.
Oh my God, Rachel said. They had a one-night stand.
This seemed to please her greatly, and the fact that she sat next to 2 4-year-olds and across from a 2-year-old did not interfere with her excitement.
Do not be shy, girl. We've all been there. These two met on a one-night stand.
She pointed a fork at Walter and Jody.
And look at them now.
Around a cheek full of mashed potatoes, Jody said,
Really, Rach?
As Walter said, Hear, hear.
We didn't have a one-night stand, Kelly said.
Alix swallowed her food. She watched Kelly look at Amira. Amira examined the details of her plate. Kelly stopped cutting into a turkey leg to say,
I met Amira at Market Depot when she was being held by the police.
Alix's mouth cupped open and she quickly closed it. The table collectively took in this information as Prudence held up a marshmallow that was melted to black on one side.